Louisville, listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, state and federal agency are inviting the public to Route 17 widening comment sessions regarding potential environmental impacts of the proposed project. Catskill Mountain Keeper has closely monitored the Route 17 project and has deep concerns about its expansion. We'll talk to them. The eight dimensions of wellness. We'll learn what they are from the Wayne County System of Care. It's Mental Health Awareness Month. And Action Toward Independence Vet-to-Vet Program is a peer-run program for vets and their family members. One of the programs they offer is a service dog program to help vets cope with PTSD. Sayonara Cowboy, William Fellenberg's debut memoir. Cultural reporter Valerie Manzi speaks to the author. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. The White House is exercising executive privilege over audio recordings of a special counsel's interview with President Biden. House Republicans had demanded an audio recording of the interview special counsel Robert Hur conducted with Biden last year. A transcript was provided, and in his own report, Hur described Biden as, quote, an elderly man with a poor memory. The DOJ is also pushing back on House Republicans' plans to hold Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt by Congress. President Biden and former President Donald Trump have agreed to face off in two debates. NPR's Franco Ordonez reports the highly anticipated showdowns mark the next chapter in the high-stakes race to November.
The first debate is scheduled for June 27th, hosted by CNN, and the second will be on September 10th, hosted by ABC. For a long time, there were questions whether the two would actually square off at all. Now they've not only agreed to a schedule, but also to skip proposed fall dates suggested by the nonpartisan Commission on Presidential Debates. The unusually early first debate means Biden and Trump will face off before either candidate officially becomes their party's nominee. Trump and his team feel the debates will highlight questions about Biden's age. For Biden, it helps make a clear contrast between the candidates for voters who are unenthusiastic about this election. Franco Ordonez, NPR News.
Former President Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial resumes in New York today. His former lawyer and fixer and now vocal critic, Michael Cohen, is being questioned over his claims that Trump knew about a $130,000 hush money payment to an adult film star ahead of the 2016 election. Cohen is the last witness for the prosecution. Stocks opened mixed this morning after a big rally yesterday, and NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow has up about 5 points at last check.
All the major market indexes closed at record highs on Wednesday after an encouraging report on inflation. Investors hope if price moderation continues, it could clear the way for the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates later this year. Walmart shares are up this morning after the retail giant raised its forecast for both sales and profits. Walmart sales in the most recent quarter were up nearly 4%. Falling crop prices are cutting demand for tractors and other farm equipment. Deere lowered its profit forecast for the full year for the second time. Builders broke ground on fewer single-family homes in April than they did the month before. Building permits, which are a guide to future activity, were also down. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
And on Wall Street, stocks are trading flat. The Dow is up 5 points. The Nasdaq is up 12 points. The S&P 500 is up nearly 4 points at 5,311. You're listening to NPR News. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has signed a law scrubbing the words climate change from many state regulations and lessening global warming as a priority. NPR's Nathan Rott reports the change comes a day after a survey showed 90% of Floridians believe climate change is happening.
The survey from Florida Atlantic University also shows that nearly 70% of Floridians want their state government to do more on the topic of climate change. But the new law, championed by state Republicans, removes references to climate change from state regulations, bans offshore wind power plants, and weakens regulations for natural gas. The consumption of fossil fuels is responsible for more than three-quarters of global climate change. DeSantis said on social media that the new law restores sanity to the state's energy policy, quote, rejecting the agenda of radical green zealots. An above-average hurricane season is forecast for Florida and the southeast U.S. Nathan Rott, NPR News.
Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, is facing a child safety probe by the European Union under a sweeping new EU tech law. The commission says it's investigating whether Facebook and Instagram cause children to become addicted to the platforms, adding it's also concerned about age verifications along with privacy risks. The regulator says it's not convinced Meta has done enough to mitigate the risks of negative mental and physical effects young people face when interacting on the platforms. The Dow is up 25 points. The Nasdaq is up 13. S&P 500 up 4. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Cunard, sailing the transatlantic crossing between New York and London on Queen Mary II, with a commitment to White Star service, fine dining, and entertainment. Cunard.com/crossing.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The New York State Department of Transportation, along with the Federal Highway Administration, is preparing an environmental impact statement for the New York State Route 17 Mobility and Access Improvements Project. That project, as you may have heard, would add a third lane to Route 17 between Exit 131, Harriman, and Exit 113, Wurtsboro, in both directions along 30 miles. Later today, the agencies are holding their third public scoping meeting for members of the public to ask questions, learn more about the project, and share their thoughts. Catskill Mountain Keeper has closely monitored the Route 17 project and has deep concerns about its expansion. Joining us now is Taylor Jaffe from Catskill Mountain Keeper. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim.
Thanks for being here. Now, I mentioned that later today, the third public scoping meeting is being held about this expansion project. There were two meetings that were held yesterday. Were you able to attend those meetings, and can you tell folks what happened?
Of course, yeah. So I was able to go to the first meeting yesterday, and that was hosted in the town of Wallkill. Tonight, there will be a meeting at Central Valley Elementary School for anyone who's interested in attending. That will be from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. And what you can expect if you are able to make it out to this public information session is there are going to be a lot of folks able to answer your questions. The room is sort of set up so that way there's a video with information that you can take a seat and watch that whole thing. It'll be on a loop throughout the evening. And there will also be different poster boards that kind of highlight the key elements of this project, as well as some representatives working on the project that are available at each poster board to ask any sort of specific questions you might have. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. PennDOT held a Skinner's Falls Bridge informational meeting with a similar format recently, which was not necessarily received so well. I guess some folks are more familiar with the traditional public comment, presentation Q&A. But this is, I guess it seems like a Department of Transportation new theme for these types of gatherings and meetings. Do you feel that that the folks are getting able to answer questions effectively in this kind of format?
That's a great question. So I think it depends. I think there's, in that sort of initial format, if we were going back to a big Q&A where everyone is kind of hearing the same questions and getting the same answers, I think that is a really powerful way to be able to ask questions and to kind of learn and build up sort of a community's knowledge about the project. And I think that is something that, we might be missing in this newer format. One opportunity it does have, though, is perhaps folks who might not be as comfortable, asking a question in that bigger group setting. There isn't an opportunity to sort of have more personal and one-on-one conversations. So, there's pros and cons to each format, but I do hope that folks are able to ask those questions, and Catskill Mountain Keeper is certainly asking questions. So, we are happy to be another line of communication for anyone who would like to reach out to us as well.
And Catskill Mountain Keeper has been asking a lot of questions about this project. It's a billion-dollar project to widen 30 miles of Route 17 in Sullivan and Orange counties. Why is Catskill Mountain Keeper concerned about the proposal? Let's remind folks about that.
Of course. Yeah. So we are concerned about this proposal. And let me take a step back even, too. The proposal was initially just to widen 30 miles of the highway. The Department of Transportation has since kind of taken their own step back, you know, hearing that, you know, that might not be the best path forward. They've taken their own step back to think of three separate concepts, one of which is still that third lane scenario. So Catskill Mountain Keeper is concerned about that scenario because adding a third lane to the highway, you know, we see that as a unnecessary use of those $1 billion. Adding that third lane, you know, would eventually create induced demand. So if you build it, they will come. More cars on the road would then lead to greater greenhouse gas emissions. That flies in the face of our climate law that we're, you know, hoping to reach those mandates. And additionally, in Orange County and the further up you go in Sullivan County, too, there are state-designated disadvantaged communities along the corridor. And these are communities that, you know, are environmental justice communities, and we want to be protecting them. So that scenario where you're adding a third lane and creating additional greenhouse gas emissions and additional co-pollutants, that would be dirtying the air, polluting the air in those disadvantaged communities.
And did the initial planning and environmental linkages study or Pell report from New York State Department of Transportation, did that initially conclude that adding a third lane would actually reduce greenhouse gas emissions?
Yes, that, you know, we certainly have, have talked a bit about that. And, you know, I think some of our partners in this Rethink 17 campaign, our Rethink 17 Alliance, the Regional Planning Association, they put out a great report evaluating the Route 17 highway widening project. You know, kind of based on that claim that we did see in that original Pell report. And the Pell claimed that by adding that third lane and reducing traffic, reducing idling cars, that would actually be, you know, reducing greenhouse gas emissions. However, you know, some of our partners at RPA, Regional Plan Association, they've put out a great report showing that, you know, again, if you build it, they will drive on it. And adding a third lane, you know, while we might see some decrease in traffic initially, eventually people will be driving more on the roadway because some of those initial congestion periods have been alleviated, and eventually that just means more cars on the road. So we've certainly, in our comments, we are making sure that in this environmental impact study, you know, this concept of induced demand is kind of studied a bit further, and we really do want to have a fuller conversation, because reducing that initial traffic, sure, that could reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but we want to see a fuller picture. What does the roadway usage look like years after whichever concept is built?
And are you able to get that fuller picture, or how will you get that fuller picture from New York State Department of Transportation and the federal highway authorities?
Of course. So right now, on May 1st, the Department of Transportation released their notice of intent, as you mentioned, and kicked off a National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, review process. So that also started a 30-day comment period. That comment period will end on May 30th. And in this initial comment period, this is really the time for Catskill Mountain Keeper, our partners, and the public to be weighing in, sharing their comments with the Department of Transportation to sort of set up the scope of what they're going to be looking at in that environmental impact statement. So, you know, for example, we want them to be thinking through what are the greenhouse gas emissions, what are the climate impacts. And so adding those comments and directing them, you know, to start answering those questions that we really have and that our communities care about is going to be really important during this initial comment period.
And if you're just joining us, we're speaking to Taylor Jaffe of Catskill Mountain Keeper about their concerns about the widening of Route 17 between exit 131 and exit 113 in both directions along those 30 miles. As you know, there's an alternative group, 17 Forward 86, the coalition that represents other interests who want to see this expansion and have been actively advocating for it. Are they successful in these efforts?
That's a great question. So, you know, I think something that we noticed yesterday attending the first public meeting is that as the meetings are progressing, the Department of Transportation is starting to, in their messaging, really consider the comments they've been receiving. I think it's not just Catskill Mountain Keeper, but many other organizations and communities that don't necessarily see, don't see the benefit of adding a third lane. I think we can all agree that we want, you know, smart, sustainable growth. There's a great opportunity to encourage economic growth in the region. But, you know, Catskill Mountain Keeper does not believe we're going to do that by adding a third lane. You know, instead we want to be advocating for an alternative, sustainable mobility plan for the Route 17 corridor. It's going to connect our communities and support that smart growth while meeting our climate mandates under the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. So, you know, while 17 Forward 86, I think, you know, it comes down to we all sort of want some of the same things. We want sort of those same outcomes of, you know, thriving communities. In terms of how this project is going to help us get there, Catskill Mountain Keeper believes that, you know, if we can fix the parts of the road that need to be fixed, get those up to standard, and then with whatever of that earmarked $1 billion is not just kind of blown away on an expansion project, there's a real opportunity there to think through how to use that remaining funding with the communities along that corridor in mind and start to think through some of the options for bike lanes, walking lanes, pedestrian access that will really, really connect us a lot more than we've been connected recently.
So you're saying there can be better local transportation, job creation, economic growth, along with environmental protection and climate mitigation.
Absolutely. I mean, Middletown, New York, for example, is a great example of there are many jobs and opportunities, although there are folks who can't get to those jobs and opportunities unless they have a car. And that's of course across both Sullivan and Orange County. But you know, Middletown I'm speaking of specifically because there are some interchanges there that could use upgrades for sure. Driving through it can be dangerous. But you know, when we're upgrading those interchanges, how can we be thinking about pedestrian access so that way folks who might have to cross a highway to get to their job are not doing so dangerously? How can we make sure that folks are able to get where they need to go even without a car? The goal here is that we don't want to be further entrenching our counties in this sort of archaic thinking of, you know, just building highways and just having car access. There's, you know, plenty of growth from folks moving up to this region post-COVID, and how can we support that so that way people aren't just coming to recreate and bringing tons of cars, but, you know, how can we actually move them into our main streets, move them into our towns in a smart way so that way we are getting that business and folks just aren't going right through the corridor.
And so after this 30-day public comment period from the National Environmental Policy Act review process, the meeting today, of course, what happens next?
Great question. So after this public information session and after this comment period, we will, you know, the Department of Transportation kind of takes those comments. They take a look, see what they can do, and then they really begin thinking through that environmental impact statement. I'm taking a look right now at their website too, because they've got a really great, great kind of timeline of what they're looking at. So right now we're in the public scoping meeting phase, and by August 2024, they're hoping to publish the project scoping report. So right now, we're adding all of our information to kind of help them figure out how wide is that scope that they're going to be looking at. And then they will turn that back to the public in August 2024 for us to begin seeing how they took our considerations.
Okay. And again, that public hearing today is at 6:30 to 8:30 at Central Valley Elementary School. That's on New York 32 in Central Valley, New York. There's more information about that meeting at the website route17.dot.ny.gov. And there's also more information about Catskill Mountain Keeper at catskillmountainkeeper.org. Taylor Jaffe from Catskill Mountain Keeper, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, Tim.
All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, the Wayne County System of Care and the 8 Dimensions of Wellness. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Radio Catskill Music Yard Sale is coming up on Saturday, May the 25th, and a generous listener has donated a bundle of vinyl albums featuring some of the greats of British and Irish folk music. So next time on The Waggle and the Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, on Radio Catskill, I'll be playing a track from just about everyone. Join me, please, for a one-hour taster of our Music Yard Sale for folk music, Sunday afternoon at 3.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9, here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and the Wayne County System of Care has planned its second annual Self-Care Day at the Park Street Complex. It's coming up Wednesday, May 22nd. The event will include a variety of vendors who promote good health and overall wellness and provide the community with experiences and information they can use to address the 8 dimensions of wellness. Here to tell us more, Dave Hartung and Faith Phillips from the Wayne County System of Care. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you both for being here. I want to start off by just asking more about these 8 dimensions of wellness. What are they? Which one of you wants to tackle that?
Okay. I can talk about it.
Okay.
So the 8 dimensions of wellness are, number one, your emotional wellness, your physical wellness, your occupational wellness, your social wellness, your spiritual wellness, your intellectual, environmental, and financial wellness. They all go hand in hand to overall make us, you know, what we are today as far as them all being emotional, physical. It's all our overall health, and we're trying to promote the self-care of your own mental health to keep you achieving the 8 wellnesses.
And how do you represent these 8 dimensions during the self-care day that's coming up on May 22nd?
So we have a variety of different things going on. We have Master Gardeners, which, you know, is one of the wellnesses. A lot of people like to garden, and that's sometimes somebody's mental health they thrive on with, you know, the plants and what they're going to be fruitful. We have a therapy dog coming from 10 to 12. We also have massages. We're going to have health screenings, financial literacy and wellness, nutrition. We're going to have some art. We're also going to do yoga, mindfulness, and then manicures too. And it's all to promote everyone's self-care and their own mental health.
And Dave, can you tell us a little bit more about Wayne County System of Care and how you work together with your partners to, you know, help make sure you have some positive health care outcomes in the county?
Sure. System of Care is a philosophy by which how care should be delivered. So Wayne County System of Care is a collaboration of the child serving systems in Wayne County. Several Wayne County human service agencies, such as Children and Youth and Behavioral Health, Developmental Programs, Early Intervention, as well as Wayne Memorial Hospital and our school districts all participate in Wayne County System of Care. And the idea is that through collaboration and improved communication that we can ensure better practices, better care for all of our consumers so that they all experience a trauma-informed care, a culturally competent care, and so that we're all communicating in a way that no one slips through the cracks and everybody has a continuity of care as they go through the systems.
And May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Of course, you are focused on mental health awareness throughout the year. How do you guys do that? What are some of the things that you do besides the self-care day that we're talking about?
Sure. So we try to participate in several different other organizations. As we said, it's a collaborative effort with System of Care. So there are events throughout the year that other organizations host that we like to participate and promote as well. Such events are like the Northeast Suicide Prevention Initiative has their Remembrance Walk every fall. There are also other recovery events in the fall that we participate in. We also participated in the Mental Health Awareness Month proclamation that was by the Wayne County Commissioners last week. Also, we hosted a neurologic trauma-informed care training at the beginning of this month. We also participated recently in one of our System of Care family members event, which was a complex medical needs expo at the Park Street Complex. And generally speaking, if there are any ways that we see outreach activities in the community or other organizations that are hosting events, we try to do our best to help market, promote, and see if we can facilitate those things happening. Oh, and I would also like to mention it was a fantastic event last week at Wallenpaupack Area High School. They started our area's first Avidem Club, and they hosted a mental health fair there, and Wayne County System of Care was very happy to participate and help promote that event as well.
And Faith, yeah, go ahead.
With piggybacking on what Dave said, System of Care is also involved with our youth and family members, which I am a family member. This idea of self-care day actually came out of two family members, myself and another one. We used to go into the schools before the pandemic, and we would have an ice cream social and celebrate the positiveness that the students were displaying. Last year, also in conjunction with Self-Care Day, we went to all of our local schools in the elementary schools and read a book called The Hugging Tree. It's about, you know, overcoming obstacles and being resilient.
You're mentioning that it came from a family member's ideas. What does it mean to you to have something like this being embraced by the entire, you know, Wayne County System of Care and the partnership there?
The partnership is amazing. I'm actually, like I said, I'm a family member, and another family member, her specialty is mental illness. So we came together and we said, let's have a self-care day. And Dave was like, okay, let's do this. And last year was our first year, and I hope this year is just as great as it was last year. And it means a lot to be embraced by all these local, because there's a lot of local organizations and, you know, school districts that are coming in to help us with these health screenings and, you know, the therapy dogs and massages and stuff like that. So it's a big collaboration between the schools, Wayne County, Wayne Memorial Hospital, and the community. So it's important to me to try to give back to the community and other people to have them aware that it's okay to be not okay, but try to keep going forward.
That's certainly a message that we're making sure folks hear during Mental Health Awareness Month, that it's okay to not be okay, but you know, see how you can seek out some help and some self-care. And again, Self-Care Day is Wednesday, May 22nd. I just wanted to ask, you know, after last year, did you hear some feedback from folks about that event? And did you incorporate some of the feedback into this year's event?
We did receive a lot of feedback from last year's event, and most of it was overwhelmingly positive. But there were some little tweaks that we do do plan on trying to incorporate this year. And there's some more vendors. So this year, we're hoping that it expands upon the success that we had last year. And we're hoping for an even bigger turnout as far as people attending the event. So it's free to the public. It's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Wednesday, May 22nd at the Park Street Complex in Honesdale. I would also like to thank our sponsor. We have lunches for our vendors being sponsored by the Lake Region IGA. And as Faith mentioned, that we have you know, a number of vendors there that that are going to help provide just another difference that if I can just quickly point out between this event and say some typical resource fairs or outreach events, that this is like an experiential event, and that we would like we'd like everybody to actively participate and actively have take part in some self-care activities during the event. So yeah, we're very fortunate that we have some folks that are going to be able to do some hands-on demonstrations and be able to facilitate those self-care activities.
All right. The Self-Care Day from the Wayne County System of Care, again, is coming up Wednesday, May 22nd. There's more information at waynecountypa.gov. We've been speaking to Dave Hartung and Faith Phillips from Wayne County System of Care. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thank you. There's no registration needed to come. I just wanted to point that out, too. It's free and no prior registration needed.
Good to know. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a good day.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll speak to Action Toward Independence about their service dog program for vets. This is Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill supporters include SUNY Sullivan, a community college in the Sullivan Catskills focused on preparing students for the future. More information at sunysullivan.edu. Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Action Toward Independence's Vet to Vet program is a peer-run program for veterans and their family members. One of the programs they offer is a service dog program for vets who are living with PTSD. Here to tell us more is Matt Clayman from Vet to Vet at ATI. Good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us about this program and how it began for folks here in the area.
Sure. So the Vet to Vet is a peer networking program for the veterans of Sullivan County. Through Vet to Vet, it's through the Joseph P. Dwyer Veteran Peer Support Program, which is statewide now. And our service dog program here at ATI and Vet to Vet, we understand how difficult it is for our veterans to live with PTSD, TBIs, MST. So we would like to offer a chance to eligible veterans to go through our service dog program. And when I mean eligible, the veteran has to have a honorable discharge and a diagnosed case of PTSD, MST. The program offers a free dog adoption if the veteran does not have their own dog, and a free leash and vest and a free training.
And how do you guys find the service dogs? Are they partnering with someone who's training them, and then you pair vets with them?
Yeah, that's correct. We have a few different organizations throughout Sullivan County who foster puppies. You know, and as cute as they are, you want to take all of them home, but you know, we bring the vet out to these establishments and we try to see if they mesh. I'm a firm believer that the dog will find the vet in some cases. So we start the dogs off anywhere from 6 months to 6 years in the program.
And what's the response been like for you with this program?
Oh, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. We have to keep in mind that not all of the dogs are going to make it through the program. I'd say there's like a 1% chance that some of the dogs won't make it, but 99%, they get through the program. The veteran and the dog have been, you know, they're happy, you know, they're living life now because of this program. You know, they're coming out of their military shell, as I like to call it. So yeah, it's been great. It's been very beneficial.
We've been talking a lot about mental health awareness during this month. And, you know, one of the things that we've spoken about in the past are some individuals who, may not be proactive in their mental health awareness. We were talking the other day about farmers, for instance. You know, they're just going out there, they're going to get it done. They're not necessarily thinking about the stress that could impact their lives. I can imagine that someone in the military, and as you sort of alluded to, this military shell that they're in, they might fall into that same category.
Oh, absolutely.
And so something like this program, does that help them come out of that shell a little bit? I wouldn't say easier, but just it gets them out of it, really.
Oh, yeah. They it opens a lot of doors for them.
Opens doors, yeah.
That they wouldn't normally go through. You know, the hardest thing to do is get a veteran through a door for anything.
Any door.
In some cases, to self-identify as a veteran. But with the service dog program, I mean, everyone loves puppies, you know. So it's just, like I said, it's been very beneficial for a lot of the veterans, and they like to give back too. So we have, you know, when we have events, we have veterans and their service dogs come out, pretty much put them on center stage just to applaud them for everything they've done.
How long does this last for someone with a service dog? Do they keep them indefinitely, or do they keep them for a period of time? Does it vary case to case?
Well, yeah, in most cases, the veteran already has a dog. They just want to train. So they'll have them for the longevity of the,
oh, I see. Okay.
Of the life. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not getting a dog from somewhere else. It's like training your own dog.
Pretty much.
But
yes.
Do you also offer someone to adopt a dog or have a service dog that they could get from somewhere else, or is it?
Yes. We can work with different organizations for that. Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. Got it. So you guys have kind of a meet and greet coming up this weekend.
Yes. This Saturday at Sticky Fingers Delectables in Conioga Lake in New York. It's Saturday from 1 to 3. It's an ice cream social, so there will be ice cream. And we'll have veterans out there with their service dogs who've gone through the program.
I can imagine the dogs are pretty happy about the ice cream social,
yeah.
Too. while we have you, the Vet-to-Vet program, what are some of the other programs you offer for vets through this program?
So we're a veteran peer advocacy program. So, you know, we help veterans advocate for their own, rights and, you know, way of life. We have military benefit advisement, financial literacy, mental health support, which is non-clinical, I have to point that out. So it is just peer-to-peer counseling. We actually have a program that we started last week. It's a sort of a salute to spouses, because spouses are, I would say, some of the unsung heroes when it comes to the military community. So it meets every second and fourth Monday of the month. Each week is going to be something different, maybe arts and crafts, and then we'll have informational sessions like the VSO from Sullivan County coming talking about the criteria for disability compensation, things that spouses aren't aware of. Yeah.
Yeah. Am I right in understanding you served in the military as well?
I did. I did 20 years in the Army.
Yeah. And so serving on this side of it, what's that like for you?
Oh, it's been very rewarding. I was a combat medic in the Army, so my whole thing was to help people. And I wanted to continue that once I got out of the military, and I found this to be the best outlet to do it. You know, I'm a firm believer that vets will listen and understand other vets way better than their civilian counterparts, if I must say. but yeah, it's been very rewarding because, you know, this is a ever evolving position. You know, you'll learn more about yourself and the veteran community by helping other vets.
Have you noticed in this area any particular unique concerns that vets have here or that you guys are helping to address? As you said, it's sort of ever evolving.
Transportation is a huge issue for veterans. Getting to and from their appointments, whether it be at Montrose, Castle Point, or even the local clinic here in Monticello. Transportation is a huge issue that we're trying to conquer. Homelessness is a huge one. And yeah, like you said, mental health.
Yeah. Where can folks get more information about Vet to Vet here in Sullivan County?
Oh, they can call us at 845-794-4228, or they can email us at vettovet.org. Yeah.
And then ATI has a website as well where you can go through that.
Too. Yeah, www.ati.org.
All right.
ATIToday.org.
Matt Kleeman from Vet to Vet, and we were talking about the service dog program, that ice cream social happening this Saturday, the 18th, from 1 to 3. It's Sticky Fingers in Conneaugle Lake. Thanks for being here, and thanks for serving our veterans, and thanks for your service.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a break. When we come back, Sayonara Cowboy, a memoir about a troubled, complicated youth and no parents in sight. This is Radio Chatskill.
Scientist Andrew Dent helps manufacturers rethink how they make stuff.
This one I thought might be interesting. Merdicotta. It's actually cups and bowls that are manufactured out of cow manure.
But this is poop. This is cow poop.
This is cow poop, yes.
But it looks really nice.
On the hunt for a sustainable future and reimagining how we get there. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Hi, this is Marco Werman, host of The World. We bring you international perspectives on issues worldwide and here in the U.S. Our reporters in the Americas, Africa, Europe, and Asia get to the heart of the day's news. Afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Sayonara Cowboy is a coming-of-age story that navigates the turbulent waters of racism, familial complexities, and the search for identity in the aftermath of World War II. DVAA is hosting the book launch for William Fehlenberg's highly anticipated debut memoir, Sayonara Cowboy, on Saturday at Krauss Recital Hall in Narrowsburg. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to Fehlenberg about being pulled between two cultures, two countries, and two parents.
Good morning, Bill, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Good morning, Valerie. Pleasure to be here.
I know you are very excited about your book being published and the reading and signing that you're going to be doing at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance this Saturday, the 18th, between 3 and 5. So can you tell us about what inspired you to write this book?
Well, I've been working on it for quite a while. I think that when I first started reading with Yarnslingers, which was 10 years ago or so, I had been meeting with other writers on a monthly basis where we'd read our stories to each other and where everybody would offer friendly feedback, but I didn't know at the time that I would be working on a full-length memoir, but that's what kind of stimulated the idea. And as time went on, I said, I think I could have a book here. We'll see what happens. So over the course of that time, I was able to craft a full-length memoir, and finally it's here, and I'll be doing a reading from it this Saturday, so it's very exciting.
Now, is this told in a story format, or is it separate essays? What's the layout of the book?
It's a very conventional layout. The story unfolds in linear time chronologically, and it's divided into short chapters. I think there's 47 of them, but it covers a long period of time from my beginning in Yokohama, Japan, through young adulthood in America. A lot of it is focused on the transition of this small family. It would be, of course, me, my mother, a Japanese shop girl in occupation Japan. This is, I was born in 48 there, and she meets and marries an American GI. Of course, I told it in the wrong sequence. She meets him first, of course, and then I'm born.
Okay.
And it's a difficult transition. You know, it's Japan has pretty much been demolished, and the city itself has been the object of bombing. And it's this. I'll be born 3 years after that, so the city itself by that time is on the mend, but it takes a long time. And my father manages to get us over to America in 1953, which isn't just a small task of getting passports. It was very difficult to get us out of Japan, but he did get us over there.
You talk about it with interesting insight, but you also have a sense of humor and amusement about yourself, which I think adds to the enjoyment of a story that has hardship and pain in it.
I think that was Hemingway that said something like, in order to write a funny book, a man's got to really survive a rough childhood. So it was like that. But certainly there is a lot of humor in it. And there's a lot of situations about language and culture and the adjustments and misunderstandings that coming from one planet to another make.
And the thing is, you were different in both planets.
Yeah, it was when I was in Japan, of course, there was a lot of hostility of me because I was only half Japanese, my father being an American. And I think that you would categorize Japan as a pretty xenophobic culture, particularly back then. I think it's gotten much less so. Back then, you were hardly regarded as a human being. You know, I was called hafu, which means half. Anoko, which is more or less a mongrel.
Wow.
So there were things that we had to navigate through as a family. And of course, my father being an American soldier, that was also cause for hostility.
And when you get to America, there's another set of problems.
Right. I'm thinking, looking back as a child, I'm looking forward to making and meeting new friends. But then it's the other side of my face, the Japanese side, that creates disturbance and unsettles people. From one hemisphere to the other, not a face that opens it up to easy navigation.
Yes, but you do navigate it with a certain aplomb. I congratulate you for that.
Thank you.
Where did the idea of the title come from, Sayonara Cowboy? Everyone I've mentioned it to loves the title.
Well, it comes from my fascination. I became enamored with the American West as it's depicted in the movies.
Right.
On the ship that we came over on, it was a military transport. It's a two-week voyage from Yokohama to Seattle. And during the course of that 2 weeks, among the things that were available was screening of old Westerns.
Uh-huh.
And they had several movies that were directed by John Ford, Apache. I just found that really thrilling, you know, John Wayne. And it's one of his classics, all shot in out in the desert, and very exciting for a kid. And I only understand part of it, but I'm also able to see it several times because it isn't as if they have a full menu of different movies to show. And even prior to that time, my father is telling me about what I'll find in America. We're going to go trout fishing. There's baseball. I just infer that there's going to be cowboys and Indians,
of course,
too. Right. But there you have it. That's when I become enamored of the whole idea of fantasy of being a cowboy. But once I get to New Jersey, it's not exactly the Wild West as I pictured it.
Hardly.
Yeah. And the sayonara part is later on. As I'm making my adjustments in America to the language and the culture, and doing it certainly with greater ease than my mother did, there weren't a lot of Japanese that immigrated after the war. So when we come over here, it's very rare that we see somebody that's Asian, no less Japanese. Because of that, my mother is more or less isolated, and she is, I guess, decompensating to some extent as time goes on. When I look back, and she's unhappy and wants to go back to Japan and take me with her, and that's part of the story too, is the conflict that I had. On the one hand, my father giving me the choice, you know, if you do you want to stay here with me or go back to Japan? And on the other hand, my mother's asking me, are you going to come with me? So that's a conflict that I don't, and this is by the time I'm seven or so.
Wow.
So they're very difficult, if not inappropriate, choices to ask a kid to make. But now, between the two of them, they certainly weren't trying to turn me against the other. That wasn't the point of it. I think it was they were so young themselves. I think that they thought that just giving me a sense of agency over my future, they were doing me a favor. But it's a kind of a grim thing to grapple with. So the sayonara part of Sayonara Cowboy really comes from saying goodbye to my mother on a ship going back. I remember the day that she went back. It was sort of like a bon voyage party, when in fact it was a very grim day.
Mm-hmm.
Saying goodbye to my mother. We went into New York City, of course, to get the boat later in the day. But we also did things that were totally out of the realm of our experience. We rarely went out to dinner, but no less we went to a fancy dinner in New York City. Then we went to Radio City Music Hall, the theater, to see a movie. And then took her to the boat where we said goodbye. And she told me not to say sayonara because it meant really goodbye forever, and just told me to say goodbye in the American way.
Wow.
That's where the two of them, Sayonara Cowboy, comes from.
Obviously, you made a choice.
Yeah. I'm here.
Right.
I'm still here, right?
And had you seen your mother over the years?
No, I haven't.
Mm-hmm.
There's just one mysterious late letter that we got. The only thing that I have of my mother so far is just a memory.
That's quite a journey to take and survive and come out the other end and be able to speak about it and to speak about it with compassion and insight and forgiveness.
Yeah. I think that's really important, you know, reconciling myself and also with both my parents, because they also suffered too. In those years that we were together, I think, you know, it was a very happy family too. But things changed, and it became, I guess you could just say it was bigger than we could handle.
Sure.
My parents, anyway.
I hope that you have a big turnout on May 18th at Delaware Valley Arts Alliance from 3 to 5. You'll be doing a reading and a Q&A. And is there anything else you would like to share with us?
You did mention that there's a lot of funny and warm things that happen in the book, and I just wanted to emphasize that regardless of all the drama and conflicts that we had, I look back at a life that was full of love and hope, and that was I think it was a life with a lot of rewards despite the conflicts.
I'm glad you added that, because it is one of the features of your sharing this, as you did in Yarnslingers, that was so engaging, is the humor about yourself. It makes it human for all of us,
mm-hmm.
and gives us hope and also acceptance.
Right. Well, yeah. I think everybody, to one degree or another, has had the experience of feeling like that they're an outsider. And I know that the need or the want to belong is so strong for everybody. And if that's a compromise, if you don't feel like you belong, it's a very difficult thing. And I think we spend a lot of our time finding our kind, and doesn't generally, I'm not talking about just in terms of race or ethnicity, but just to find other people that you're in community with and you feel very comfortable with and find a way to trust and grow together.
You know? Yes. Thank you so much for sharing this process with us and your beautiful insights.
Thank you, Valerie.
Culture reporter Valerie Manzi speaking to William Fellenberg about his debut memoir, Sayonara Cowboy. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. You can hear this episode, past episodes, and all of our local programming at our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Hi there, this is Brian, host of The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9. I'll be playing a mix of indie, alternative, college, rock, and pop, some new music, and some old classics. That's The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9, only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Hi, this is Jeff, your host on Radio Catskill's new show, Electric Mountain, bringing you a choice selection of dance music from back in the day to today. I'll also feature a guest DJ every week spinning a continuous set, bringing their unique style. Come dance with us each and every Saturday night from midnight to 2 a.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local. Yeah, let's go.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. today's forecast for our listening area, mostly cloudy, maybe some sun poking through as well, high of 65. Clouds tonight, low of 51. Tomorrow, clouds 67, maybe a shower late tomorrow night. And for the weekend, Saturday, cloudy 64. Sunday, pleasant, partly sunny, high of 70. On Point from WBUR Boston is next, followed by Democracy Now! At noon. It's 11 o'clock.